The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
I'll now recognize the Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier. Yesterday, the province agreed to an early payout of $2.4 million to Bay Ferries. The Minister of Economic Development claimed to have saved $600,000, which he will donate to Team Southwest. So my question to the Premier, can the Premier tell this House how $600,000 of hush money is going to replace the millions of dollars his government took out of the economy by cancelling the ferry service?
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, what the government did was take the opportunity to look at the contract and try and save the people of this province some money. The penalty clause was such that this money was going to be would be used up over a series of months. So we felt that it was better to be able to take that money and to put it into a fund that would actually. And put into a fund that would actually be able to benefit the people of Southwest Nova Scotia. So the idea that that's the limit of the efforts for Southwest Nova Scotia, of course, that's not true, but it is a part of what we want to use to be able to benefit that area of the province.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, during the recent by-election in Antigonish, residents of that riding were tempted with a $1.5 million library. With the cancellation of the ferry service in Yarmouth and a by-election on the horizon, $600,000 isn't going to cut it. So my question to the Premier is, what are you going to come up with to entice the people of Yarmouth to forget your callous and reckless decision of devastating their economy?
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think the Leader of the Opposition's question is a little unflattering, but what we intend to do, Mr. Speaker, to attract the voters of Yarmouth is to provide good government.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this government recently spent $60 million to create 120 jobs in Pictou County. That's $500,000 a job. Yesterday, the NDP government suggested $600,000 would fix the economy of southwestern Nova Scotia. That's the equivalent of one job in Pictou County, Mr. Speaker. And I would never suggest that Pictou County doesn't deserve economic development. But my question to the Premier is, why do the people of Pictou County get economic development to a tune of $500,000 a job, well, the people of Yarmouth can't even get you to come to their town for a meeting.
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, the reality is that our economic development efforts are broad-based across the province. We look for good projects that we are able to provide incentives for, so that we can create strong economic performance. And I can tell the Leader of the Opposition may be interested to know that I will be in Yarmouth on Wednesday, and I will be meeting with the Mayor and Council there.
The order, please. I'll recognize the Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yesterday, I asked a question to the Premier in regard to an issue critical to the future economic health and prosperity of downtown Halifax. Despite the fact that a new trade and convention centre is a top priority of the Halifax business community, the Premier downplayed it as nothing more than, quote, a conceptual drawing. Yeah. My question to the Premier is this. Were you aware of the Memorandum of Understanding signed by the government officials on May 4th of 2009?
Nope. When you made your...
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, of course, Mr. Speaker, I'm aware of it, and it only goes to demonstrate the point that I was making yesterday.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to remind the House that there is a difference between a conceptual drawing and a memorandum of understanding, and I will table for the Premier's interest and for his reading the memorandum of understanding. It appeared yesterday he knew nothing of this. Will he commit today, now that he is aware of it, to make this important project take it seriously and to accept the conditions agreed upon in May 4th, 2009?
The Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, what I said yesterday and what I've said before with respect to this project is that we're waiting for a proposal to come forward. I mean, that is, in the essence, what the Memorandum of Understanding was about. It is in all of the answers that we've given to this question, whether here or from members of the press, is that consideration of a project or a proposal needs to be done on the basis of a full understanding of what that project is, not just the details of density and those sorts of things, but in things like financing as well. So at this point, we haven't seen anything that tells us, you know, what the overall cost of the project is going to be, what the municipality's involvement will be, what the federal government's commitment to the project is, and no one, I don't believe, Mr. Speaker, would make a decision with respect to a proposal without knowing those kinds of very basic facts.
Oh, they would.
The Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party in your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The economic spin-offs quoted yesterday, part of the research, well known to the folks in the city, like the ones a major convention centre would provide, are just what this city and this province needs, coming out of a major economic downturn. So my final supplementary to the Premier is this. Will you show the leadership you pledged to Nova Scotians and see that the development of the new trade centre is a top priority of your government in order to meet the projected 2013 deadline?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I will do what I have said I will do in relation to these matters, and that is that I will make sure that these matters are properly considered in light of all of the factors that need to be assessed, and we will do it in a prudent fashion, something that unfortunately the previous government was unable to do.
The Honourable Member for Clare.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Economic and Rural Development. Mr. Speaker, in December, the NDP government announced that they would no longer be funding the Cat Ferry from Yarmouth to the U.S. This announcement was a bombshell to the people of Southwest Nova. Businesses will be forced to close. Nova Scotians will be forced to look for new employment. Families will be forced to move. So my first question to the Minister is, how is your government preparing to address the negative economic and tourism impact this loss will have on families and businesses in Southwest Nova?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And as I said yesterday, there's a team that's called Team West. It's comprised of many departments within the government that's working with companies and individuals in the western region of the province, working in the western region of the province with all the stakeholders, and together they're coming up with strategies as to what the future is going to look like. So we are working very, very cooperatively with the people.
Okay. The Honourable Member for Clare on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. That's certainly comforting and reassuring. Mr. Speaker, this should be a straightforward questioning and answering, but the Minister and his government continue to bog down debate with rhetoric and speeches. So, Mr. Speaker, my question to the Minister is quite simple. Did your government contact the federal government and ask for federal financial assistance on a ferry service, and if not, why not?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And the short answer to the question is yes. The dialogue with the federal government has been ongoing for years, and when we formed government, the conversations with ECOWA continued. There was no secret with respect to the viability of the CAD and the lack of the business case.
The Honourable Member for Clare on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, this ferry service is an important link between Canada and the United States. There are mixed messages coming from the federal Conservative members and from the provincial New Democrats. The MP for West Nova is saying there was money in the federal budget. The MP for Central Nova is saying there wasn't money in the federal budget. And the provincial NDP government, Mr. Speaker, well, they created this devastating situation by announcing this out of the blue. So for clarification, I'd like to ask the Minister, did the federal Conservative government contact you to offer financial assistance for a ferry service from Yarmouth to the United States? Yes or no?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And no member from the federal government contacted me to say that they had money set aside in any budgets federally with respect to the CAD. I also would like to add, Mr. Speaker, that we even were in contact with the main officials. And certainly we've got confirmation from them that they had no interest in partnering with us. And they had no interest in partnering.
Order, please. The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And they told us in writing that they had no interest in helping us with the funding of the CAD. Okay.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier. The member from Cole Harbour became the Leader of the Official Opposition in 2001. So my question for the Premier, is that when taxpayers of Nova Scotia began paying your Bar Society fees?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The program that was in place, I believe, was put in place by the provincial government in 1999. It was extended in 2006. Like all the other allowances, these were reviewed. Once we became government, the one that you are talking about was terminated.
The Leader of the Official Opposition on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Premier preaches his belief in transparency, but when it comes to how long the people of Nova Scotia have been paying his Bar Society fees, it's a very different story. So my question to the Premier is, when did the taxpayers of Nova Scotia start paying your Bar Society fees?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. All this information has been released to the public. It was released through the press. From 2006 forward, the program was extended to me, as it had been in place since 1999. When we came into government, we reviewed this policy, and we ended it.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Let me try to help the Premier with his answer to the question. If taxpayers began paying his fees in 2001, the total amount taxpayers would have shelled out is $26,612.60. If taxpayers began paying his fees in 2003, The bill is $24,341.35. So my question to the Premier is, did taxpayers shell out $26,600 or $24,300 for your Bar Society fees?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I said earlier, this matter has been thoroughly canvassed. The amounts relating to me and to other members who received this were released to the public. And Mr. Speaker, as I said, the program began in 2006 and was extended at that point to the Leader of the Opposition. And, of course, Mr. Speaker, after we were elected, we reviewed all of the allowances. Many of them changed after 2006, as the host leader knows. And this particular one was terminated.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, my question to the Minister of Finance. Does your government accept the opinion of the Deloitte report, which confirmed for Nova Scotians that the budget handed to your government by this progressive conservative government was a balanced budget?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The essence of the Deloitte report is that that crowd over there left a structural deficit that this government has to deal with, Mr. Speaker. They said that we have to get back to balance, and Mr. Speaker, starting in the budget that I delivered to this House on Tuesday, this government will take the first step back to balance.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on your first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I'll take the word over an independent accounting firm any day over this government. And they certainly have not kept their promise to Nova Scotians to balance the budget. What has changed, Mr. Speaker, since June 2009? Interest rates are still at all-time lows. The bank rate has remained at 50 basis points since this government has taken office. Our Canadian dollar, although it is stronger, I spoke with a banker at a dinner yesterday who confirmed for me that some Nova Scotia exporters were doing just fine. Inflation has been stable. When I visited with the finance minister in Ottawa earlier this month, he confirmed to me that our receipts from the federal government and transfer payments are stable, and in some cases growing. For instance, the health transfer is legislated to grow at 6% per year. To the Minister of Finance, what significant economic event has happened in Nova Scotia since for the NDP to table their second deficit budget for Nova Scotia?
Order, please. The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, the problem with the Conservative finance critic is he's asking the wrong people. If he wants to know why we're in the financial situation he's in, he should look to his like the seven survivors of the last election over there. And here's, Mr. Speaker, here's a few of the questions he might want to ask them. Why did they allow a $100 million Colchester Hospital to go $80 million over budget? Why did they take a $70 million BFIT program that was supposed to last 10 years and spend all the money in 2 years, Mr. Speaker? And Mr.
Order, please. The Honourable Minister of Finance has the floor.
Mr. Speaker, and yesterday that honourable member was quoted as saying that he would balance the next budget and he would do it by cutting. So since this is question period, I have a little quiz for him. What would he cut? Be specific.
Order, please. The Honourable Minister, Member from Inverness has the floor.
Mr. Speaker, I wouldn't ask Nova Scotians to take my word for it. I certainly wouldn't ask them to take the Minister of Finance's word, but I would ask them to take an independent auditor's word for it. Now, if Nova Scotia entered the hands of the NDP government in a state of balanced budgets, 8 years of them, and if revenues are stable, through you, Mr. Speaker, to the Minister of Finance, what expenditure has grown since he took office that would need to be cut to balance the Treasury for Nova Scotians?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Mr. Speaker, the fundamental problem facing this province is that expenditures are growing much faster than revenue. The unfortunate thing, Mr. Speaker, is that that crowd over there knew it when they were on this side of the House, but they kept spending money even though they knew that revenue was dropping, Mr. Speaker. That's the problem. Mr. Speaker, they didn't come to grips with that problem, but we will.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you very much. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Service, Nova Scotia Municipal Relations. Yesterday, the Premier was asked by the Leader of the Official Opposition a very simple question about how his government would respond to a URB decision on gas pricing. But as usual, and appears to be policy for this session, he avoided answering. It's now been over 24 hours since that decision was released, and so that's more than enough time to review a very blunt decision. The URB is very clear, quote, it was contrary to the preponderance of evidence to change the pricing of gasoline. So, Mr. Speaker, my question for the Minister is, what will she be recommending to her Cabinet colleagues with respect to that URB decision?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia Municipal Relations.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I will be taking the time to read the report in its fullness, and then we'll be speaking with my colleagues. I need the time to take to read the report, and even though 24 hours might seem like a lot of time, I am going to take the time over the Easter break to read the report and then work with my colleagues on the recommendations. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, for the promotion you almost gave me there. You know, Mr. Speaker, I didn't know it took more than 30 minutes a page to consider a report as blunt and succinct as the one the Utility and Review Board issued yesterday. The fact is the NDP made a bad proposal. We told them that in the election, Nova Scotians have told them that, and the URB told them that in no uncertain terms yesterday. So my question for the Minister is, if the statements, the very blunt statements by the Utility and Review Board are not sufficient evidence to assure the government that staggered pricing is a bad idea, what information does she have that she would be considering that could possibly justify overturning the URB's decision?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia Municipal Relations.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I said, I will be taking time to read the report in its fullness and speaking with my colleagues, and as soon as a decision is made, we will announce it.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll make sure I call Mr. O'Connor on the weekend and ask him what the opinion will be. Premier O'Connor, I'm sorry. Since the Minister has indicated she intends to consult with her colleagues, my final question is for the Minister of Economic and Rural Development. Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Finance has all but admitted he's going to raise the HST on Tuesday, making life more expensive for Nova Scotia families. The NDP tax hike will also have the effect of furthering the spread of gasoline prices at the border between New Brunswick and Nova Scotia, as well as on many other goods and services that people buy. And store owners in that region are already saying that they may be forced to close and that they will be they will find people cross-border shopping for even more items. So my question for the Minister is, given that the Minister of Finance has all but indicated he plans to hike the HST, what is the economic impact going to be on that part of Nova Scotia as a result of that hike?
The Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And before I can answer that question, I guess we're going to have to wait and see what's going to be in the budget.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, my question to the Minister of Finance. The economy of Alberta is cyclical. It is very dependent on the price of oil and gas. In fact, as oil and gas prices recovered this past year,
the provincial share of royalty revenues rose from 8% to 26% of that provincial budget. For the benefit of the members of this House, can the Minister of Finance explain to what extent Nova Scotia's economy is cyclical?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Mr. Speaker, my goodness. How?
Order, please. Order, please. I'm asking the other members to give respect to the member that's speaking at the time. The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Mr. Speaker, we're a trading province open to the world. Our economy is very subject to the economic ebbs and flows, particularly with the United States and with the rest of Canada, Mr. Speaker. And yes, in this province, we have suffered from the recent recession. We're certainly not the best off in the country, but we're not the worst off either. And now we can see the way forward, Mr. Speaker, as recession begins to come to an end, and particularly with the second year of stimulus spending, Mr. Speaker, I would suggest that we once again have a bright future.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, projected royalty revenues for Nova Scotia offshore oil and gas for this past year were estimated to be 2% of the budget revenues. This offers proof that Nova Scotia's economy is not as cyclical as other provinces. Mr. Speaker, once again, through you to the Minister of Finance, what business in Nova Scotia could remain operating after 5 years of losing money with the cultural mindset of we'll just turn a profit in 4 years' time?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Mr. Speaker, you know, one of the things that the member alluded to was offshore royalties. And one of the difficulties that we faced when we came to government, of course, was royalties are our volume times price. And we, unfortunately, our major offshore project had also a scheduled maintenance delay, which meant that when I came into office as Minister of Finance, I had $300 million less to work with than the previous government did, just year over year, just one revenue item, Mr. Speaker. But the essential problem, Mr. Speaker, is that that crowd over there knew their revenue was dropping and they just kept spend.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, before this Dexter NDP government was elected, they promised Nova Scotians to balance budgets. And now we have to take their medicine. It tastes awful and it's not going to work. Mr. Speaker, it's creativity and entrepreneurship that fuel this province. It is not the NDP new deficit plans that we're seeing. To the Minister of Finance, why does he feel it's okay to run deficits when Nova Scotia small business owners have to run businesses that show profit each year?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. When we went out across the province with the back-to-balance consultation tour, Mr. Speaker, we listened to Nova Scotians across the province, and what they said to us consistently in every location was that they thought that 3 to 5 years was the right time to get back to balance. Because on the one hand, you have governments that are getting weaker when they run deficits. On the other hand, if you go too far, too fast, it's a shock to the economy, it's a shock to families, it's a shock to businesses, Mr. Speaker. We think we found the right balance. We have followed the advice given to us by the people of the province. And Mr. Speaker,
order.
Mr. Speaker, I admit the whole situation is not what we would have desired when we came into office, Mr. Speaker, but the challenge is bigger because of the mess they left behind.
The Honourable Member for Kings West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the minister responsible for the Nova Scotia Gaming Corporation. In the fall session, the minister assured Nova Scotians that the government gaming strategy would be renewed openly and publicly, and a new strategy would show us the way forward for the next 5 years. In fact, Mr. Speaker, when he was critic for gaming, the minister stressed the need for the government, and I quote, lead us all in a discussion about gaming. Today is the first day of April. The Nova Scotia Gaming Corporation's five-year strategy is over. The minister has waited almost 6 years to have this discussion. This was his chance, Mr. Speaker. My question to the minister, we have waited 5 months for the minister to lead us in this provincial discussion, which he promised us. Why has this not happened?
The Honourable Minister responsible for the Gaming Corporation.
Mr. Speaker, I do apologize. I was distracted because a member on the other side of the House used language that he knows is unparliamentary. Mr. Speaker, he said that I lied and stole, and then another member, Mr. Speaker, called me a liar. And Mr. Speaker,
Order. I will deal with this at the end of question period. At the end of question period, if there's a point of order, we'll hear it at that point. The question, I'm going to ask the Honourable Member for King's West to repeat your question.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And just to get right to the question, we have waited 5 months for the minister to lead us in a provincial discussion on a new gaming strategy, which he promised. Why has this not happened?
The Honourable Minister responsible for the Gaming Corporation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We have said that now that the previous government's five-year gaming strategy has expired, that we will be developing a new strategy. It is my intention to announce the results of that strategy during Responsible Gambling Awareness Week in October. We have been looking for someone to lead the consultation process, which I assure the House, that member in the House, will be complete and will be thorough, and I expect to have information for the House on that point very soon.
The Honourable Member for King's West on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, if the Minister's consultations are similar to how he has been addressing tax review, then it's clear that Nova Scotians should expect more closed-door backroom bargains. Mr. Speaker, the Minister spent much of the fall singing the praises of the Nova Scotia Gaming Corporation when they were awarded a Level 4 certification by the World Lottery Association. However, on November the 18th of 2004, the then Leader of the Opposition said quite clearly, and I quote, the biggest gamblers are exactly the people that the Gaming Corporation makes the most of, and that's where their profit margin is, end of quote. That quote sounds like a clear attack on the Nova Scotia Gaming Corporation. My question to the Minister is this, exactly what role will the Nova Scotia Gaming Corporation play over the next 5 years in the NDP's gaming strategy?
The Honourable Minister responsible for the Gaming Corporation.
Well, my goodness, Mr. Speaker, if I'm going to say what the role of the Gaming Corporation is going to be over the next 5 years, that is one of the questions that we're going to be asking during the gaming strategy. I do invite the member to participate in the development of that strategy, and when it is completed, we will know where we're going to go over the next 5 years.
The Honourable Member for King's West on your final supplementary.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I'm very appreciative of the Minister's invitation to be able to speak, because at the tax consultation process, the first rule of the House was that I would not be able to speak, so I really appreciate this opportunity. The NDP of the past saw a clear and present danger. In fact, the NDP gaming critic of 2004 said, and I quote, we're all benefiting from the revenue of gaming, but in the process, the government is destroying a certain number of families, end of quote. But now the minister tells us that it's only a small percentage who are at low, medium, or high risk of problem gambling. The minister's continued silence on the gaming strategy in the absence of any provincial discussion. So the minister promised Nova Scotians he would lead speak for themselves. Their election pamphlets were correct, Mr. Speaker. From everything that they have done in the past 10 months, this NDP is different, just not in the way that Nova Scotians expected they would be. My question to the minister, apart from the NDP's about-face and their own values, will the minister tell Nova Scotians here and now what changes to expect for the future of the government's role in gaming within this province?
The Honourable Minister responsible for the Gaming Corporation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. First of all, just to correct something a member said, it was never, ever stated during the back-to-balance process that any member of this House couldn't speak. In fact, I went out of my way to introduce every member from every party at every session. And if the member would just swivel in his chair and talk to the member from Digby Annapolis, that member will tell him that I specifically invited that member to come to the front and address the crowd in Digby.
Now,
Mr. Speaker, in terms of the gaming strategy, it is a very important question, and it's something that really deserves to go beyond the kind of rhetoric that we hear from the opposition here. We are going to be, over the next number of months, up to Responsible Gambling Awareness Week in October, working with all interested parties to develop a gaming strategy that will govern this government over the next 5 years, Mr. Speaker. And the member just needs to be patient as that process unfolds, and I invite him to take full part in that process.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Premier. A recent Corporate Research Associates poll determined that 74% of Nova Scotians were opposed to the idea of an HST increase. The results are clear and the people have spoken. So my question to the Premier is this. Will the Premier commit today to taking the advice of the people who elected him rather than to rule out a detrimental tax hike for the people of Nova Scotia?
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the member opposite for the question. Of course, it's not the habit of the government, at least not this government, to govern according to the polls, Mr. Speaker. We of course, govern according to what we think is in the best interest of the entire province, Mr. Speaker. And so, in accordance with many of the principles that were laid out in the economic panel report, we will begin with the Minister of Finance's first budget that will put us back on the road to balance in this province, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Minister of Finance, while speaking to the Halifax Chamber of Commerce yesterday, dismissed the CRA poll results as not representative of the feelings of Nova Scotians. Mr. Speaker, my question to the Premier is this. Why does your government reject scientific polling done by reputable firms in favour of informally conducted interest group influenced straw polls?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Of course, what we intend to do is make sure that we put in place the particular and specific financial policies that will best serve the people of this province. And, Mr. Speaker, but further on the poll, the one that we paid attention to was the one on June 9th.
Order. The Honourable the Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, there are a lot of people waiting for the next
That's
poll.
The next poll. That's right.
Last night, in an interview with CTV's Steve Murphy, Don Mills, President and CEO of Corporate Research Associates, said that data gathered at the Back to Balance tour was biased information because the public gatherings were stacked with vested interest groups.
Oh, really?
So my question to the Premier is this. If the information gathered on the Back to Balance tour does not represent the broader interests of Nova Scotians, how can he base a four-year fiscal plan on a study that was deemed flawless by industry professionals?
The Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the back-to-balance sessions held by the Minister of Finance was the largest public engagement on matters associated with the finances of the province ever held in this province. Mr. Speaker,
order, please. Order. Order. Order, please. There's far too much discussion back and forth in this chamber. And, you know, we're going to have a question period. We have to have some respect for one another. And I'm going to ask the Premier to finish up his answer. The Honourable the Premier. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I said, this was the largest public engagement on the finances of the province by any government at any time in our history, Mr. Speaker. It was an opportunity for the people of the province to come out and to give their opinion to the Minister of Finance to help frame both the context and the specifics of how we would proceed in getting the province back to balance. I think it was well appreciated. In fact, Mr. Speaker, that's the feedback that we've had from people right across the province.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton South.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question today is for the Minister responsible for Nova Scotia Business Incorporated. And Mr. Speaker, my question to the Minister would be simply this. What is the salary of the President and CEO of NSBI?
The Honourable Minister responsible for NSBI.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And, you know, I can't say for sure, but I would say that it's probably in the vicinity of probably $180,000 $180,000 a year plus. But I could certainly check for a more accurate figure and get back to the member opposite.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton South on your first supplementary.
I'm glad that the Minister responsible said he'd get back to me on that because, Mr. Speaker, I asked this question today because on October 13th, the Minister made a commitment to table the salaries on SBI executives. This was last fall, and he has not followed through on his word. I will quote, Mr. Speaker, what he said during debate on supply after I asked for the salaries, travel, and expenses. The quote is, "As far as salaries are concerned, certainly I will get that information. It is my understanding that salaries are not in the annual report." Now that's a piercing glance at the obvious. "But we will make those available as well. I will see that they are tabled in the House." Close quote. Those are the Minister's words. So my question to the Minister, where are those salaries that you promised to table, and why have you not tabled them?
The Honourable Minister responsible for NSBI.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I will make every effort to have those salaries tabled today before we adjourn the House. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton South on your final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, you better get somebody on it because we're going to be out of here in about another 20 minutes. So I would hope to see them before that. Mr. Speaker, the issue here is about transparency. The IEF is quite possibly the least transparent pot of money that the Cabinet has to play with. They can dole out as much cash to whoever they see politically fit. NSBI has an advantage, however. They are business people making business decisions, and this is the right way to do it. However, this minister can't even be trusted to keep his word on the simple commitment made last fall to table the public information that the people of Nova Scotia want to know about how much it's costing this government to run NSBI. I would ask the minister again to table all the relevant information on NSBI as soon as possible so that Nova Scotia will know how much it's costing us to keep that organization over in the building they're in. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Minister responsible for NSBI.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And the member opposite, his comments have been duly noted. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Richmond.
Mr. Speaker, the Regional Occupational Centre in Port Hawkesbury is doing valuable work with mentally challenged persons. They provide personal and vocational training for their clients. Mr. Speaker, the centre pays their clients just $2 a day for the work that they do. These individuals and their families see the value of this program, but $2 a day is clearly an insult. Speaker, the centre cannot afford to pay their clients any more money. As it stands, they have to secure 25% of their budget through contracts and fundraising. So my question to the Minister of Community Services, do you believe that $2 a day is a dignified wage for the clients of the Regional Occupation Centre?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, what I would say to that is the fact that I am concerned with any of those types of situations, and I will have the opportunity to look into it with my staff, and then I will let the Honourable Member know.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Regional Occupation Centre provides its clients with an ability to work and to learn very important life skills and be able to give back to their community. Speaker, the clients have been paid a mere $2 a day for years, while the government has made several increases to the minimum wage rate in this province. At the same time, we all know that the cost of living continues to increase. So my question again is, why is the Minister of Community Services abandoning the clients of the Regional Occupation Centre?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, I would like to make it very clear that our government is here for the people of Nova Scotia and for the people that work at that facility. And the Honourable Member mentioned that for years they were paid that amount. Well, that's because of the former government and the way that they neglected that segment of our population. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on your final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I'm certainly hopeful that that's an indication of what the clients of Regional Occupation Centre can expect in next week's budget, that this government is going to right the wrongs of the past for the clients of that centre. Mr. Speaker, the Regional Occupational Centre receives a per diem for each member attending the program of just $3.50 per day. Mr. Speaker, these rates were set in the 1970s. I wrote to the department last year and asked that this rate be reviewed. I received a letter back from the Deputy Minister stating that it's not expected that increases in clients per diems nor wage increases can be a consideration at this time. So my question to the Minister, the final supplementary, is are you willing to meet with me and the Executive Director of the Regional Occupation Centre to discuss the issue of increasing the daily rate of $2 that is currently being paid to the clients of that centre?
Good question. The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, I'm always available to meet with anybody in this province that has a concern to be addressed. Certainly. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is for the Premier. It appears that the Premier's Chief of Staff, Dan O'Connor, knows more than experienced, trained, and internationally renowned expert organizers at the Royal Nova Scotia International Tattoo. The Premier default, Dan O'Connor, seems to have taken on a new executive authority, dismissing six options for Her Majesty's appropriate attendance at the tattoo. The Premier's now tarnished her family's long tradition spanning 30 years. Mr. Speaker, can the Premier explain to this House why he's pushed the tattoo down the theatrical stairs, and will he do the right thing and recommend the Queen's attendance? And Mr. Premier, remember, it's never the wrong time to do the right thing.
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I knew when we took on this job that we would have lots of authority, but I didn't realize that we were going to be able to have control over Buckingham Palace, Mr. Speaker. And indeed, that is not the case. The reality is, Mr. Speaker, that we receive proposals. We forward them on to the Palace for consideration.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on your first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the Premier is not informing the House correctly. The Premier's office and the Premier's office alone acted unilaterally to destroy attendance by Her Majesty to the tattoo. It is the Premier and his Premier default, apparently, Dan O'Connor, who decided, not Buckingham Palace, as he would suggest, and his cronies that are involved with this. And, Mr. Speaker, you know they approached you. Right. Will the Premier admit this is just another small-minded, retaliatory and vindictive action by this socialist NDP government against the tattoo because they dared offer expert advice in contrast to the political optics demanded by the Premier and his office?
I must give the member credit for very descriptive language that he uses, and I will pass it on to the Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, you know, Mr. Speaker, I think when questions are framed in that manner, they really speak for themselves. And there's not a lot I have to say except that we are working hard to ensure that the Queen's visit to this province will incorporate a great reception for her that will show the regard and warmth that the people of Nova Scotia feel for Her Majesty. And we're going to work hard to do that. We're going to try and do it, Mr. Speaker, unlike the opposition, with a little bit of dignity.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on your final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, respect was shown to the Premier, but too bad he couldn't show it back to other people. Mr. Speaker, members of the royal family have attended the tattoo on four occasions, and surprise, surprise, all went well. For example, in 1991, Princess Anne attended the tattoo, spoke from the royal box, along with the Premier. Imagine that. And it was a very successful event. Four royal visits coordinated through the expert personnel at the tattoo, and somehow now there's a problem, and indeed it is. It's the Premier, Dan O'Connor, and the bullheaded NDP socialists that are trying to lead things here. Right. Mr. Speaker, right. Buckingham Palace expected this visit, as indicated in correspondence I'll table for the House. Again, Premier, why would you personally cancel the attendance of Her Majesty given the success of the tattoo to match protocol, performance, and professionalism? Too bad the Premier can't be big enough to do the same.
Read the letters, guys.
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, I think the Honourable Member should do is perhaps have a look at what the palace is actually saying in the British press about these things, because they are responding very, very directly. And Mr. Speaker, our intention, and I'll just repeat this again, is to ensure that two institutions in this province have an appropriate celebration. One is the institution of the monarchy and Her Majesty, and the other is the great institution of the Navy, which will also be celebrating 100 years this summer. So, Mr. Speaker, we are going to work hard to make sure that both of those great traditions of this province are properly respected.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Health. Dr. Ross has been travelling from community to community across our province, causing uncertainty wherever he goes. Residents and staff of the Annapolis Community Health Centre have worked and continue to work diligently when it comes to the recruitment of physicians. The cloud of uncertainty, however, is causing anxiety amongst residents and is undoubtedly creating obstacles when it comes to the recruitment of physicians. Doctors are nervous about making commitments to work at the Annapolis Community Health Centre, and understandably so. So my question to the Minister, what guarantee will the Minister make that Dr. John Ross will not abandon the Annapolis Community Health Centre like her government has abandoned the people of southwestern Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this government is very much committed to safe, accessible, emergency health care services all over the province of Nova Scotia, including in the Annapolis Valley, and we are very committed to the Annapolis Health Care Centre, Mr. Speaker. And Dr. Ross will be reporting in an interim report relatively soon, Mr. Speaker, and this, I think, will, if there is any uncertainty, this certainly will help
people in that area realize the direction in which this government will be going. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your first supplementary.
Speaker, citizens are upset. When they become upset, they look to their government to provide leadership. They look to their government for answers, yet they feel abandoned by the actions of this government. So my question to the minister is, does the minister acknowledge that the fact that the actions of Dr. John Ross are causing great anxiety in communities, especially since her government had already promised to keep all emergency rooms open 24/7 during the election campaign?
The Honourable the Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I want to reassure the Honourable Member and all citizens of Nova Scotia that this government are very much committed to ensuring that we have safe, accessible emergency health care services from one end of this province to the other, Mr. Speaker. And that is why we appointed a very well-respected emergency room physician to meet with people around the province, look at the information in terms of the patterns of use of emergency departments, and really develop a strong plan to fix the problems in our emergency health care system, Mr. Speaker, and that's what we intend to do.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, they hired Dr. John Ross for one reason, and that's to hide behind so the Premier can break another promise that he made to the people of Nova Scotia during the election campaign. Dr. Ross came into Annapolis and did a hit and run. He visited physicians, walked through the facility, but he failed to talk to the residents. And Mr. Speaker, this government has been invited to a number of public meetings to talk to the people of Annapolis, Royal, and surrounding area, and it's been a no-show from this government. While it is easy for this government to boast about the attributes of the Annapolis Community Health Center when it is convenient to do so, it has been clear that to date they are unwilling to stand up and defend it. So my question to the minister, will the minister commit to the residents of Annapolis that a 24/7 emergency room department will be a service offered at the Annapolis Community Health Center in the future? A simple yes or no will do. Will you keep your word or not?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, our commitment to the people of this province, including the residents of Annapolis, is that there will be safe, accessible emergency care from one end of this province to the other, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, our government is very committed to the Annapolis Valley Health Care Center. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the Premier, the letter I tabled from Buckingham Palace states, and I quote, "Please find enclosed a message from the Queen for the Royal Nova Scotia International Tattoos commemorative book, which is produced in celebration of Her Majesty's visit later this year." Clearly, all was in order until the Premier default, Dan O'Connor, interfered. Mr. Speaker, Her Majesty was to attend during the 100th anniversary of the Navy, which I'd expect the Premier to respect as Minister responsible for military relations, and I would like to quote the Queen, quote, "A truly international undertaking, the tattoo has strengthened the bond of friendship between countries and between the military and civilian communities since it was first opened in 1979 by my mother, Queen Elizabeth," end quote. Mr. Speaker, what was good enough for the Queen Mum and three other royals is all of a sudden, under the Dexter NDP, no longer good enough for the Queen according to their recommendations. Will the Premier finally admit that he, his office and government have made a royal mess of this affair, harming the reputation of Nova Scotia and regrettably that of the tattoo?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. What he's tabled is a letter of congratulations from Buckingham Palace with respect to, with that's not what it says, Mr. Speaker. The reality is that we are what we are going to do is to provide for this royal visit.
Order, please. If members have conversation, I'd ask them to direct it through the chair. Otherwise, the Premier has the floor.
We are the hosts of this visit. We intend to take make every everything available to the staff of the royal visit to ensure that the program that is put on here for the Queen appropriately displays the warmth and affection that the people of Nova Scotia feel for Her Majesty.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, history has a funny way of repeating itself, and not in a good way for the NDP. The slight of the royal tattoo, which should come as no surprise because it was the NDP who have criticized the role of the royals in Nova Scotia in this House, ask a certain member of this House how he felt about the royals and what he said in this House about the role of monarchy in this House. The betrayal of this government to the tattoo comes as no surprise, as anyone who questions the NDP is subject to their small-minded, retaliatory and vindictive actions by the socialist regime. Mr. Speaker, why can't the Premier accept this royal boondoggle as his own and do the right thing, step up to the stage
order,
and let the royal
order,
show...
Order, time for oral question period has expired.
This podcast was previously aired on Legislative Television. The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.